here on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. And our stories are written especially for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Because of a rise in COVID-19 cases, some colleges in the United States have decided to postpone classes. Dan Friedel reports on that decision. I will return with this week's words and their stories. Then Brian Lin talks about a Japanese company and its decision to go into the electric car business. Ashley Thompson brings us a story from Afghanistan. To finish our 30 minutes together, Gregory Stockel will talk about the state of the tattoo industry in the European Union. But first, here is Dan Friedel with the Education Report.
College students in the United States are currently spending their winter break away from schools. A rise in COVID-19 cases could mean that they will be spending a little more time away from campus. Many colleges are moving classes online for the first few weeks of the new year. Others permit students to return, but require them to stay in their rooms for class. So far, more than 70 colleges across 26 states are starting the term online, and others say they are considering it. At the University of California in Riverside, a city east of Los Angeles, students must stay in their rooms for 5 days, and they are required to pass 2 separate virus tests before being permitted to spend time with others. Kim Wilcox is the school's chancellor, one of its top leaders. He said the plan is to rebuild the school's bubble after students spent Christmas and New Year's away from campus. The University of Chicago is delaying the start of the new quarter to January 10th. Students will take classes online for the first 2 weeks, and the plan is to have students back in person on January 24th. Christina Howard is graduating from the University of Chicago in June. She said she never could have imagined that almost half of her time in college would be affected by the pandemic.
It's kind of a weird feeling to be doing this again. In my last year, I had really hoped that I would get a full year to finish on a more normal kind of note, but I guess that's not going to happen.
When asked whether she thinks the university will start on the new date, she said, "We'll see." Some schools, including Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts, and Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., are asking students to get an additional shot of vaccine, also known as a booster. Sue Lawrenson is the vice dean for undergraduate education at Georgetown. She told VOA the university will require all students and professors to have a COVID-19 booster shot by January 21st. Georgetown plans to start classes online before moving to in-person classes on January 31st. The hope, Lawrenson said, is that the number of COVID-19 cases in Washington will decrease by mid-January.
One thing that I think will make a big difference to students this time around is that compared to last year, students are able to return to their residence halls on campus as originally scheduled in mid-January, which will allow them to reconnect with their classmates.
Ken Henderson is a top leader at Northeastern. He told the Associated Press that he thinks COVID-19 is becoming endemic, and the school wants to control COVID effectively, not let COVID control us. Endemic means the virus will continue to exist in some areas, but will not affect all the people in all areas, like a pandemic. In the central part of the U.S., the University of Illinois plans to have students come back to classes in person after a one-week delay. Robin Caller is a spokeswoman for the university. She said the university expects a spike when students come back. We want to make sure we're on top of that so we can crush it as quickly as possible, she said. Jake Maynard is a student at George Washington University, another college in the nation's capital. He said he is fine with a week of online classes, but beyond that, he hopes officials trust in the booster shots and provide a traditional college experience. I am a junior, but about half my schooling experience has been online, Maynard told the Associated Press. You lose so much of what makes the school the school. I'm Dan Friedel.
Thanks, Dan. And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Whenever there is a health crisis, two groups of people can bring help: doctors and nurses. A nurse is a person skilled or trained in caring for sick or injured people. We also use the word nurse as a verb. You can nurse a person or animal back to health. And you can nurse a patient, helping that person heal or get better. But you can also nurse a symptom, something unhealthy, like a headache after a late night party. You can nurse other bad things too, like a grudge. A grudge is a strong feeling of anger towards someone that lasts for a long time. If you nurse a grudge, you keep the anger alive. You make sure it doesn't lessen over time. You can use the verb nurse in other ways. For example, you can nurse a drink. That doesn't mean you are trying to heal it, but rather you drink it very slowly to make it last longer. For example, if I go to a costly restaurant and buy a $15 drink, I might nurse it to make it last the whole meal. The word doctor is also used as a verb. The Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary says that one meaning of the verb doctor is to give medical treatment. For example, she doctored her sick friend. That makes sense, but personally, I have never heard the term used that way. In my opinion, it is more common to nurse someone back to health. Sometimes people say doctor to mean fix. For example, he has doctored that clock several times. But again, this usage is rare. A more common usage of the verb to doctor is to change something in an honest or dishonest way. For example, the school board official was accused of doctoring her study results. She was caught changing the results to fit her policy needs. When we change something, either in an honest or dishonest way, we sometimes add the word up to doctor. For example, the writer doctored up the script to better fit the actor. Here is a dishonest example. The legal team was accused of doctoring up photographs of evidence. Now, let's hear two expressions using the word doctor. If something is exactly what you want or need, it is just what the doctor ordered. This expression can be used in many situations. For example, if I worked all week, a night on the couch with a good movie might be just what the doctor ordered. In a recent Words in Their Stories, we talked about another expression that means the same thing. If something hits the spot, it is just what you need at that time. Our last expression is this: doctors make the worst patients. This means it is difficult to give people advice about something which they do for a living. This is because they might feel they know better than the person giving the advice. For example, Mary tried to persuade her boss at the bank to seek help for his growing debt. But he got angry. He said he knew best how to deal with his money. She just shook her head and said to herself, "It's true, doctors make the worst patients." Now, let's hear two neighbors use some of these nurse and doctor expressions. "Hi there. I see you're cleaning up your garden. It was so beautiful this summer."
"Thanks. I was pretty proud of it. Are you good with plants?"
"I'm only good at killing them, unfortunately. Like this one. It's pretty brown."
"Oh, dear."
"Do you think you can nurse it back to health?"
"I'm sorry, but this plant is dead. You need to water your plants."
"Good advice. You should tell Celia across the street the same thing. She owns a plant store, but still the plants at her house look awful."
"I tried to give her some advice once. She did not like that one bit. You know how it goes. Doctors make the worst patients. But as for your plant, it's dead. There's no nursing a plant back from the dead."
That's too bad. I wanted to use it for some photos for my website."
"Maybe you could add a plant."
"What do you mean?"
"You know, doctor the photo on your computer and add a plant."
"Isn't that dishonest?"
"The photo is just for your website. It's not like you're doctoring official evidence in a criminal case. Now that would be dishonest."
And that's the end of this Words in Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo. Now, let's hear a story from Brian Lynn.
Japan's Sony Group says it plans to launch a company this spring to explore entering the electric vehicle, or EV, market. Sony's president and chairman, Kenichiro Yoshida, announced the plans Wednesday in the United States. He was speaking at the start of the CES Technology Conference in Las Vegas, Nevada. The new company, called Sony Mobility Inc., also aims to make the best use of artificial intelligence, AI, and robotics technologies, Sony said in a statement. It will seek to help realize a world where everyone can live in harmony with robots on a daily basis, the statement added. Sony said its imaging, sensing, and entertainment technologies put the company in a good position to redefine mobility, Yoshida said. Such technologies are expected to play an important part in the operations of self-driving vehicles. During his presentation, Yoshida introduced a new electric vehicle model called the Vision S2. He said the vehicle is based on the same technology as the Vision S1, a model presented at the CES conference in 2020. Sony said it started road testing the Vision S1 in Europe in December 2020. And it has carried out tests on the vehicle's imaging, sensing, and safety systems. The company has the same plans for its Vision S2. Yoshida told reporters the company sees mobility as an entertainment space where passengers can choose individualized entertainment and connect using 5G. 5G is the next generation of high-speed wireless technology. Many large automobile manufacturers worldwide are investing heavily in electric vehicle technology. American-based electric car maker Tesla has risen to become the world's most valuable automobile company. In Japan, Toyota Motor Corporation announced in December it planned to invest $70 billion to electrify its automobiles by 2030. Many investors also expect iPhone maker Apple to launch an electric vehicle within the next few years. Meanwhile, a U.S. company based in Michigan said this week that it had tested a version of a new battery. The device was able to power a vehicle for 1,210 kilometers on a single charge. The test was carried out in a Tesla Model S vehicle. The company, Our Next Energy, or ONE, says it plans to begin producing batteries with a similar ability by late 2023. ONE's chief executive, Mujeeb Ijaz, told Reuters news agency, "We plan to build batteries in North America and believe it can be done economically." The company has worked to develop a long-distance battery that uses safer and more sustainable materials. The batteries are designed to contain more energy in a smaller, less costly space. Ijaz has 30 years of industry experience in developing battery systems for electric cars. He formerly led projects for Apple and battery maker A123 Systems. He said the company aims to remove in-demand metals such as nickel and cobalt from its batteries without losing energy density. "We aim to reinvent battery chemistry as well as the cell architecture to be able to reach 1,210 kilometers of distance between charges," Ijaz told Reuters. I'm Brian Lynn.
Thanks, Brian. Next, Ashley Thompson brings us a story from Afghanistan.
In a large, simple settlement in western Afghanistan, Aziz Gul is fighting to save her daughter. Her husband sold the 10-year-old girl into marriage without telling his wife. He took a down payment so he could feed his family of 5 children. Many of Afghanistan's poorest people are making such decisions as their nation faces severe poverty. The aid-dependent country's economy was already struggling when the Taliban seized power last August. The international community then froze Afghanistan's valuables overseas and halted all funding, unwilling to work with a Taliban government. The effects of such actions have been devastating. Aid groups now say more than half the population faces severe food shortages. Day by day, the situation is deteriorating in this country, and especially children are suffering, said Asuntha Charles. She is national director of the World Vision Aid Organization in Afghanistan. The organization runs a health center for displaced people just outside the western city of Herat. Charles said, "Today I have been heartbroken to see that the families are willing to sell their children to feed other family members. Arranging marriages for very young girls is somewhat common throughout the area. The groom's family pays money to make the marriage happen. The child usually stays with their own parents until at least 15 years of age. Yet, with many families unable to pay for even simple food, some say they would permit husbands to live with their very young daughters. Some are even trying to sell their sons. But Ghul is resisting. She herself was married off at 15 years old. She said she would kill herself if her daughter, Khandi Ghul, is forcibly taken away. Ghul remembers well when she found out her husband had sold Khandi. For around 2 months, the family had been able to eat enough food. She decided to ask her husband how they were paying for the food. That is when he told her what he had done. My heart stopped beating. I wish I could have died at that time. But maybe God didn't want me to die, Ghul said. Khandi sat close to her mother. Each time I remember that night, I die and come back to life. It was so difficult. She asked her husband why he did it. He said he wanted to sell one and save the others. You all would have died this way, he said. I told him dying was much better than what you have done. Ghul told her brothers and village elders that her husband had sold their child without telling her. They supported her. With their help, she received a divorce for her child, but only on condition that she repay the $1,000 that her husband received from the groom's family. It is money she does not have. Her husband fled, possibly fearing Ghul might denounce him to officials. The Taliban government recently announced a ban on forcing women into marriage. The family her husband sold the girl to has already tried several times to claim Khandi, Ghul said. If I can't provide money to pay these people and can't keep my daughter by my side, I have said that I will kill myself, Ghul said. But then I think about the other children. What will happen to them? Who will feed them? Ghul's oldest child is 12. Her youngest is just 2 months old. Ghul leaves the children with her mother while she goes to work in people's homes. Her 12-year-old son works picking saffron after school. He makes just enough to keep the family fed. But the saffron season is short. We don't have anything, Ghul said. I'm Ashley Thompson.
Thank you, Ashley. Finally, here is Gregory Stockel.
Tattoo artists say their art will lose much of its color and their businesses' profits because of new bans on some chemicals. The European Union laws went into effect on January 5th. Thousands of chemicals used to make many ink colors are now illegal to use. The EU says the restrictions help protect public health. Officials say the banned chemicals may be linked to cancer and allergies. In Amsterdam, Tycho Veldhoen has worked in the industry for 25 years. He says he fears the loss of colors will have a huge effect on his work, and he expects the damage will increase next year as more inks face bans. Tattoo artists in the EU have had a difficult 2 years since COVID-19 hit with restrictions and lockdowns. Now, they say a perfectly avoidable crisis is hitting them even harder. There should have been a lot more preparation, Veldhoen said. The EU disagrees that there was a failure to prepare, however. It says it started working with experts on the issue in 2016. The EU announced more than a year ago that January 5, 2022 was the measure's start date. EU spokesman Eric Mamer said that this is not a surprise or something completely new. He called it a generalization of practice in the 27 member group. 7 EU nations already had national restrictions. The EU says there are legal substitutes for the banned inks. However, tattoo artists say those products move too slowly from manufacturers to tattoo businesses. Angelo Baidani works for Boucherie Moderne in Brussels, Belgium. He said the new inks became available just a week ago, adding that a bottle costs double compared to the one before the ban. The EU estimates that about a fourth of all 18 to 35-year-olds in Europe are tattooed. The EU's Chemical Control Agency, ECHA, said that cases of allergic and inflammatory skin reactions are expected to decrease thanks to the restriction. It also said it might decrease cases of more serious health conditions, including cancer, as well. Michal Dirks is an artist working to end the restrictions. His Save the Pigments petition has already collected signed support from 176,000 people. Dirks says the ban is not supported by medical science. Eric Maynard, co-organizer of Save the Pigments, said such bans unfairly hurt the industry since people will seek to buy the products illegally. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Thanks, Gregory. And that's our program for today. Thank you for listening. Some content in this program was provided by the Associated Press or Reuters News Agency. And don't forget to join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Anna Mateo.